Chris Russell is in a very happy D.C., although I'm guessing a little hesitant, with the history of the Capitals. What's up, Chris? How you doing?
Hello, Mr. Cofield. How are you, pal?
I'm good. Muted excitement in D.C. over the Capitals. Like, we're close, but they are the Capitals.
Yeah, I would say it's nervous excitement would probably be the best way I would describe it. I don't know if that's exactly accurate. I mean, there's people that are already ticketing them for the Stanley Cup Final and held the Stanley Cup and planning a championship parade down Constitution Avenue and then, you know, all that stuff. I'm not doing that. I'm just, you know, like trying to say, hey, look, you know, if they can get a Game 3 win tomorrow night, that means the Lightning would, of course, have to win all four games in a row in order to, you know, Red Sox 2004 over your beloved Yankees style in order to come back, and I just don't see that happening. However, if the Lightning find a way to win tomorrow night in Game 3 here in D.C., then it's a completely different ball game. It's a completely different series. So, you know, of course, tomorrow night is really the series, essentially, in a nutshell. Until I see tomorrow night, I'm not super confident. However, I mean, it's hard to walk away from games one and two and go, wow, man, I really expected that because I picked the Lightning to win in seven. I thought it would be a very close series. I did not expect the Caps to win both games and to win, quite honestly, both games pulling away.
What's the problem on the Tampa side? Bad defense, or has Vasilevsky just been absolute crap, giving up, what, 10 goals and 62 shots?
Yeah, I mean, Vasilevsky hasn't been good. There's no doubt about that. They've allowed two goals in closing seconds of periods in both games. One with 6 seconds to go in the end of the first period on a power play after they scored with too many men on the ice on a, what turned out to be a great-looking goal on their end, which would have tied up the game at 1-1 in Game 1 on Friday night in Tampa. So that not only took a goal off the ice for them, and it was correctly called, by the way, but it also put their guy in the box, and the Caps scored 3 seconds into the power play. Ovechkin ripped one, and quite honestly, it was from the, you know, center midpoint, and I mean, it was a blast, but Vasilevsky went right under his glove. You know, you got to catch that. You got to get that. And the other thing that I would say is there were a couple of goals last night, certainly, that he absolutely should have probably had, but he's being hung out to dry, Cofield, from this standpoint. I never expected. The Caps had so many two-on-ones, three-on-two, odd-man breaks in the Pittsburgh series, and even in the Columbus series where they were down 0-2 at home and then won four straight. They had so many of those. I thought it was because Pittsburgh was really tired, really old, kind of beaten down, worn down. I never expected that against this Lightning team, yet here we are through two games, and the Caps have an 11-2 odd-man rush advantage. And I don't care how good Vasilevsky is, and he's really good. I don't care how good he is. He's not that good, and the Caps are putting, you know, good shots on him, like Devontae Smith-Pelly, who scored the game-tying goal to make it 2-2 last night. Perfectly executed. He received the puck from a pass from a guy named Alex Chason, and not only does he not shoot it where Vasilevsky is kind of rotating to as he sees the pass, he doesn't shoot it right at him. He goes cross backside, if you will, as I try and explain this, to where Vasilevsky came from. So that's not Vasilevsky's fault. That's just a great shot selection by Devontae Smith-Pelly, a fourth-line guy who was benched in the Pittsburgh series because he wasn't doing anything and because he took a couple of bad penalties. So the Capitals are rolling all four lines. They're connecting on the power play, which they have throughout the playoffs, which they've always been pretty good at. And basically, Tampa's giving up way too many odd-man rushes.
Chris Russell, D.C., on the Fan. He's covering the Capitals series as the Caps out to a 2-0 start against Tampa. Did you see this number on comebacks in the history of the semis and the finals? Is this right? Since 74-75, only two teams have rallied from a 2-0 hole in 41 situations?
I thought it was like 2-38, but it might be 2-39 or whatever it is. And I don't even know if and honestly, I got to check this out. I don't even know if those two teams that came back, you know, we're down 0-2 at home. I mean, that's the real predicament that Tampa Bay is in, is, you know, they've now got to play three out of the next five if it goes that far in Washington. But honestly, Cofield, the Caps are a better road team and have been for the last couple of years in the playoffs. And this may favor them if they advance to the Stanley Cup final and take on, hopefully, for everyone's sake, the Vegas Golden Knights, or the Winnipeg Jets, I guess, for nobody's favorite sake, is that the Capitals are 7-1 on the road in the playoffs and 11-3 over the last 2 years on the road. They play better on the road because, you know, for whatever reason, they are just more aggressive. They block things out. Evgeny Kuznetsov, one of their best players, their top-line center, who's paired with Alex Ovechkin, just like, I don't feel anything at home. I love being on the road. I play better on the road, you know? So, I mean, maybe that's just a certain mentality that you adopt. I don't know. Maybe they like getting booed. Whatever it is, they just play better on the road. So maybe it's not a good thing that they're coming home, but that place will be jumping, I can tell you that much, tomorrow night.
Why do you think the Capitals were so underrated? They were, what, the fourth-best team, actually tied for third, right, with 105 points. The Caps were...
They really have moved.
I don't get why they were so low in the overall odds to win the Cup.
Well, I think a lot of, you know, for a lot of reasons. Number one, they won the President's Trophy a couple of years in a row and were such a miserable failure, failing to... And when I say miserable failure, I mean... you know, they lost to the Pittsburgh Penguins 2 years in a row in the second round. It's not like losing to the Stanley Cup champions is such an embarrassment, but the expectation was that they were going to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in the second round, and just once in the last 11 or 12 years, you would make it to the third round, right? Once. Never mind winning a Stanley Cup, just once you would make it to the third round. So this year, they lose five or six key free agents, and when I say key free agents, that's not even including Nate Schmidt, who, of course, wound up on the Vegas Golden Knights via the expansion draft, who was, you know, a seventh defenseman for them, but was definitely going to play a lot of minutes for them, and definitely, as you guys know, has speed and an offensive flair, and has developed into a pretty responsible, overall young defensive defenseman as well. So they lose all these guys. Nobody thinks they have a chance. They were inconsistent to a large degree during large stretches of the regular season. They got it together down the stretch because Philip Grubauer, their backup goaltender, now played really well down the stretch. Of course, Ovechkin had a resurgent year after he was called out by his general manager, by his coach, by other people in the NHL for a down year last year. Came in great shape, had a great year, maybe his best regular season year in 3 or 4 years, and they got it together, won the division. And, I what's interesting is still nobody gave them a chance. A lot of people picked against them in Columbus. And then they lose the first 2 games of that Columbus series, and before they lose even game two, both of those games in overtime, Barry Trotz has to go back to Braden Holtby, his former Vezina Trophy winner, and a guy who's got a 2.03 goals against in his career in the playoffs. Who he had the you want to call it the audacity, maybe the balls, whatever you want to call it, to bench, to not play, and yet still got away with it, and since then they've been on a tear, and then people started to believe. But, you know, I mean, look, sometimes these things happen. When expectations are low and when people don't believe, you respond with your greatest effort.
Chris, I know you got like 2 minutes left here, so let's turn the page and look at Vegas Golden Knights and Winnipeg in game two. So I just read you the number, folks. VGK does not want to fall behind 2-0. Not impossible to come back from, but the Knights do not want to fall behind 2-0. What'd you see in game one in terms of matchups? Because, man, early on, the Knights did not look ready to play and were kind of overwhelmed by the size and skill of the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit because, you know, like you mentioned, they can move the puck, they are physical, they're fast, and, you know, I don't want to say they're the best team in the NHL right now, but they sure at times resemble that, winning huge Game 5s and a domination of a pretty darn good Nashville team in Game 7 on the road. Now, I'll be enough, and maybe this hurts the Vegas Golden Knights and what we saw on Saturday night. They didn't play well or that well in Winnipeg, oddly enough. So I'd really like to see them bounce back, of course, tonight, make this a good series. I think it's going to be really important, of course, you know, we start with Marc-Andre Fleury, of course, and he's been so good whatever happened Saturday aside, that's, you know, neither here nor there. You've got to make sure that you stay out of the penalty box. You don't give them extra man opportunities, one. And you've got to make sure whatever opportunities you get, that you connect on them, that you move the puck, that you get good quality shots, those dirty goals that the Vegas Golden Knights have been able to get throughout the course of the regular season. Get those extra rebounds, because I think that goaltender for Winnipeg, I don't want to say he can be had, but I think much like any goaltender, if you get a good shot on him and a puck is loose in front and there's traffic, you know, it's hard to see through all those bodies, and, you know, something could just, like, be right there, and you can't see everything, and you can't stop everything. So when you get sticks flying around or whatever, and maybe it goes off a skate, maybe it goes off a leg, something like that. That's what the Vegas Golden Knights need to do, I think, a little bit better of a job of being a little bit more grittier, a little tougher, a little bit more tenacious than I think they were on Saturday night.
Boy, someone's got to move Bufflin a little bit. I don't know if it's Ryan Reeves. Yeah. Alex Tuck tried it in game one, and Tuck's, he's 22. He's a big guy. He's 6'4", 225, and he got folded on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, Bufflin's a big boy. I mean, he was such a key for Chicago and has been for, Winnipeg for the last couple of years. I mean, look, the good news for Vegas is even if they lose tonight, while that would be a disappointment, again, they're coming home. That's the difference for Tampa Bay, is they're down 0-2. Not only are they going on the road, but they haven't faced Nicholas Backstrom, who might be the Capitals' best all-around player, at least Vegas. If they lose tonight, they're coming home, and they have pretty much their full arsenal. So that's at least a feather in the cap for the Vegas Golden Knights.
All right, Chris. I know you're getting ready to go on the air. Appreciate a couple minutes.
Thanks, pal. Appreciate you. Always good to catch up.
There you go. At WrestleMania621 on Twitter.